We just heard Sara Sant'Ambrogio on the cello playing Libertango. This is her arrangement, music of Astor Piazzolla with Anessa Newman at the piano. This is music that will be in a slightly different arrangement on the program this weekend when Sara Sant'Ambrogio performs with the Las Cruces Symphony Orchestra, Lonnie Klein conducting. I'm delighted to have you back in the studios of KRWG, Sara Sant'Ambrogio.
It's great to be back here.
It's been several years, but this is your third performance with the Las Cruces Symphony Orchestra.
Yes,
first with
is.
Your acclaimed, internationally acclaimed trio, the Eroica Trio, which you were one of the founders of.
Mm-hmm.
And then you performed several years ago the
Saint-Saëns
cello concerto, and Saturday evening at 7:30, Sunday at 3 with the Haydn.
Haydn C major, yeah. And the two Piazzolla arrangements that I did for cello and orchestra of Oblivion and Libertango.
Wonderful. Let's talk a little bit. We'll get to the music in mm-hmm. a moment. We were just talking off mic. I knew that your father was the principal cellist of the
St. Louis Symphony Orchestra
mm-hmm. and that he was your first teacher.
Although
I was listening to the interview we did several years ago. You started on piano and then you swapped instruments with your sister?
Yes, I did. I started on piano at 2, and because everyone in my family for many generations had played music, so it just seemed like the thing you did if you were cool. So, but at 4, I just started wanting the cello, and I was begging for it, but they thought I was too tiny. I was a skinny kid, and they didn't think I was going to be big enough. And they gave me a violin. And my older sister was still on piano. And then I played the violin for about 2 weeks, sounded like a cat in heat, and I just hated it. And so one night I took matters in my own hands at 5 years old and traded the violin to my sister for a book she had that had really pretty paintings inside of it of fairy tales. And then that year, getting school shoes with my older sister, the shoe salesman said, "Wow, your younger daughter's feet are much bigger than your older daughter's." And my mom mentioned it to my father, and he said, "Really? Hold your hand up." And I held my hand up, and he realized how massive my hands. They look like E.T. And so the next day I got a cello, and I was just so happy.
And you knew the cello because your dad was playing
yes,
the cello.
Yes, I did.
So your son now is in middle school.
Yes.
And you just told me a story. I'd love you to repeat
yeah.
it.
So his middle school last year participated in a festival of orchestras that played at Carnegie Hall. And so he was the fourth generation of my family to play on the stage of Carnegie Hall. And he was so excited. It was the most excited I've ever seen him about classical music, was being on the stage of Carnegie Hall, which will do that to you.
Yes.
And he was very excited, too, because he beat Mommy, because I had been the ripe old age of 15 when I played at Carnegie Hall, and he was 12 when he played at Carnegie Hall. So he's now the youngest of my whole family to play at Carnegie Hall. I've played at Carnegie Hall. My son has. My older sister has played at Carnegie Hall in the Cleveland Orchestra. My dad has played at Carnegie Hall in the St. Louis Symphony, and my grandparents, my grandmother played at Carnegie Hall, actually, a recital when she was very young. I think 20 or something.
And she played?
The piano.
Piano,
and
okay,
yes.
Wonderful.
And my grandfather was a violinist and violist, was in a string quartet with Joseph Gingold, who was the best man at my grandparents' wedding. Gingold.
Wonderful.
And Gingold was Joshua Bell's teacher and a great violinist.
A great violinist, a great pedagogue. He taught at Indiana for mm-hmm. decades.
Yeah.
There's a huge portrait of him, actually, in the lobby of one of the halls at the Jacobs School of
yeah.
Music.
Yeah, at IU.
Yeah, wonderful violinist. Wow, well, that's a great family legacy. It
yeah.
must be a little bit difficult if anybody comes along who doesn't want to play
yeah,
music.
You're not kidding. Yeah. My younger brother was the black sheep. He's a law professor. My mother is happy about that. But the rest of us are like, really? You want to do that?
Let's talk about the music. You've got music of Haydn, and this is a work. Haydn wrote a cello concerto that was known, and then they knew there was another one, but it was lost for 200
right.
years. That's
yes.
the one that
it's
you're playing.
It's fascinating that they knew that it existed because there were two bars that were referenced in a sort of encyclopedia of works that was in the early 1800s, like 1803. And then in another book of compositions of that period, it was, those same two bars were referenced, but nobody knew where it was, and they just assumed that it would be lost forever. And then in 1961, so actually almost more than 200 years after it was written, and they think it was written in the 1760s, it was discovered in Prague in a castle, and it was authenticated, and it's a brilliant concerto. I mean, really, just, it's so full of joy and effervescence. It's typical youthful Haydn, and then the last movement goes like a bat out of heck. I mean, it's just so much fun and so virtuosic, as always, you know. So it's a blast to play.
And immediately became, of course, a staple.
Yeah. Yeah, even more famous than the one that we knew existed all along.
Yeah,
I mean, it's amazing. It's also, that's what happened with the six Bach solo cello suites, mm-hmm. Which are six of the greatest masterpieces of the Western world. And they were also lost until the early 20th century.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it every once in a while, there's rumors that a new work of somebody, Mozart or somebody, has been found.
Yeah.
And it's usually in, as you said, a castle or a library in Europe where it's been buried for 150, 200 years under other manuscripts.
Right.
And somebody's real, and it's not signed.
And somebody looks at it who happens to be, luckily, like the serendipity of the like million and one chance that somebody who finds the music is actually an expert in that particular composer, so recognizes immediately that it is actually this long lost treasure. I mean, it's really exciting. I always think, you know, I scour things like that when I'm in Europe, because I always think maybe I'll find the next great, like a Mozart cello concerto, which doesn't exist, but maybe I'll find it, you know.
Yeah, so that's actually what makes Haydn's concerto so interesting is neither Mozart or Beethoven wrote cello concertos.
Exactly.
So from the classical era, there are others, Boccherini and others, of course, who wrote lots for cello, but of those, the three biggies.
The only one who did. And there's supposedly he wrote four. There's only two that we have.
Oh, so there may be another castle.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Okay. Though, interestingly, that it's funny because whenever I play the Beethoven Triple Concerto, which I have actually played more than any other cellist who's ever lived, I performed it more often. I should be in the Guinness Book of World Records, actually. Everybody always says to me, you know, the cello part in that concerto is particularly difficult. And he solved sort of acoustic problems by putting the cello higher than the violin, even though our natural range is lower. And everybody always says, and cellists call it the cripple concerto. And people always say, you know, you seem so comfortable up there. How is it possible? Don't you find it so difficult? And I've always said, no, it's no more difficult than Haydn D major. Turns out that actually Haydn wrote the D major concerto for the same cellist in his youth that Beethoven wrote the triple concerto for.
Oh, interesting.
So no wonder the writing was so virtuosic, because this guy, he must have been amazing. I would have loved to have heard him.
Yeah. Interesting.
And actually, I was just going to say that is something that I've always been fascinated by, that living artists, cellists, will inspire great composers to write for them. Mm-hmm. And I'm super excited because right now I'm preparing to go to London to record with the Royal Philharmonic. I'm recording the Elgar Concerto, which is one of the great concertos, romantic concertos, and arguably the greatest, if not one of the greatest, of the 20th century. It harkens back to the 19th. It's so romantic. And I'm recording a new American concerto that was written for me by a composer who just loved my playing and had to write something for me.
And who's that?
His name is Bruce Wolosoff. And it's really romantic. It has a bluegrass feel to the last movement, which is really fun because he knew I was spending a lot of time recording in Nashville. And so he just had this bluegrass kept seeping into his writing process. So it's so cool how you can inspire someone to create a work that, you know, maybe 200 years from now, some young cellist will be playing, you know?
Yeah.
And I had something to do with it. I also have Michael Bacon of the Bacon Brothers. He has written a concerto for me as well that we're working on getting the premiere. And that's also interesting because he heard me play at Lincoln Center last season. I had seven concerts at Lincoln Center. One of the pieces I was playing was for solo cello, where I sing in a high soprano while I'm playing.
Oh my.
And he thought the sound was so cool and just so neat that he put me singing in with myself playing in the cadenza. And so I'm super excited about that, not only because it's expanding the range of how I express and how we all express, but by putting it up in the high range, it makes it so that it has to be a female cellist, which is still female cellists have a little bit harder time than males. And with everything that's happening in the world right now, I really want to do whatever I can to help level that playing field.
Oh, that
no
is
pun intended.
That is so impressive, and also it means you know, like singers, you have to preserve your voice before
no
those performances.
Kidding. I was the first time in years that I had been nervous was each time that I opened my mouth and thought, I hope to gosh that this sound comes out, because I was in a 2,000 seat hall.
Yeah.
And so to try to fill that while I'm playing, but it was really neat because my brother, who is the black sheep of the family, the lawyer, he was in town and he came to one of the concerts. He had no idea that I was doing this, and it's just, you know, he said, there you were in the spotlight, just you playing this solo cello, and all of a sudden I hear this soprano singing, and I'm thinking, is it a boy soprano or is it a female soprano? It's like so pure, and where is it? And I'm looking all over the stage, and then all of a sudden you threw your head back and your mouth is open, and he said I realized the sound was coming out of your mouth. He's like, Sarah, when did you learn to sing? And I was like, well, we sang in church choir, right? And he was like, oh my gosh. It was so funny.
A new talent emerges, yeah. And wonderful that Bruce Wolosoff has written this piece.
Yeah,
for you.
I'm
That's
really
great.
Excited.
Look
really
forward
excited.
To it.
It's a great piece. And I'm going to record the two piazzolas as well.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. And you did the arrangement.
I did.
For the
yeah.
piazzola that you're performing this weekend.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and it's super fun. And you know, I love the arrangement that is on the recording with piano, mm-hmm. but I wanted to spice it up more. And so when I recorded that, I was just getting into piazzola, but now I play a lot of piazzola, and I am much more comfortable in the idiom, so I add a lot of improvisation in there, and I really spice it up. So the Liber Tango, I wrote an original cadenza to start the piece, and then wrote a orchestra introduction to bring us into the actual body of the piece, and then I like completely jazz it up. It's almost like Liber Tango on steroids.
Oh boy,
it's so much fun. I mean, if you don't want to jump out of your seat at the end of that piece, I don't know what's going on. You don't have ears, you know.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing it, and I should just say you also have that wonderful CD with the Eroica Trio Passion.
Yes.
With lots
of piazzola.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. So we only have a couple minutes left. One of the things I noticed on your website, you're really not shy to start using some new technology, and you've got this Chopin thumb drive that you've made available with music and description.
Videos and all kinds of other stuff.
Yeah. Just tell us a little bit about that.
Well, you know, the thing is, number one, all computers now that you buy have no CD drive.
Yeah.
It's upsetting to me because the sound quality on a CD is so much richer than the way they compress it for downloads.
That's right.
All computers have a little
USB
slot.
Port.
Yeah, USB mm-hmm. port. So I thought, well, why don't we do that? And then I was like, it's easier to carry it around. It's environmentally friendly because it's reusable, it's recyclable. You can download the whole thing on your computer and then reuse it for other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so easy. You can put it in your pocket. You can use it as a keychain, you know. And you just stick it. It's like it's the size of a credit card, you know. And then you just flip out the little thing. And I thought it gives you also. I love talking from stage about the music and what I'm thinking and what the composers are thinking to give you that like sort of window into the soul of the artist and of the music. And so here I put all that on there, you know, in so that it's almost like an immersive concert experience, you know. And I think I will be doing that with this new recording with Royal Philharmonic as well, because it's getting easier and easier with just as technology is in some ways bringing us down a road where the quality of sound is going down. It also brings us down a road where we can create
more options.
Yes. Yeah. And much richer experience.
Yeah.
And so that's, I figure, you know, why just look at the negative? Let's embrace the positive. I'm always saying that to my son. Where's the silver lining? There's nothing, I don't consider anything an obstacle. I consider it an opportunity.
Yeah, well, congratulations, because that it's a brilliant idea.
Oh, thank you.
I hope it's very, very successful.
Thank you so much.
We need to wrap this up. This is Pledge Week, but Sarah, thank you so much for coming. Let me just repeat. This is Sarah Santambrosio I've been speaking with. She's the soloist tomorrow night and Sunday with the Las Cruces Symphony Orchestra playing music of Haydn. There's also the magnificent and underplayed Symphony No. 3 of Tchaikovsky, the Polish Symphony on the program, and music of Piazzolla. And do you listen to public radio?
Oh, my gosh. Are you kidding? I grew up on public radio, and now public radio is even more important than ever before because it's the one place where you can hear great music, and it's a way to enrich your life. I mean, I feel like music, and beautiful music, and especially classical music, is one of the great tools in our arsenal of as human beings to achieve joy, serenity, happiness, and peace. And without public radio, there's very few places to be able to reach it and give it to a wide audience, some of whom can't afford to go and buy a CD or download it, you know, but everybody has a radio in their car, and you can turn the radio on and hear this absolutely beautiful music and thought-provoking conversations that just enrich your life as a human being.
Thank you so much, Sarah Santambrosio.
Thank you for having me.